And now it's my great pleasure to introduce tonight's moderator, Miss Lisa Fung. Lisa Fung served as arts and culture editor at the Los Angeles Times for 10 years, where she launched Culture Monster, the first newspaper blog devoted solely to visual art, architecture, theater, classical music, opera, and dance. She was later named arts and entertainment editor at the Times before becoming the executive director of entertainment industry website, The Wrap. Please give a very warm welcome to Lisa Fung.
Hi, thank you everyone for coming tonight. We're looking at whether LA is really the cultural capital of the world. And when we think of culture and the creative community in Los Angeles, we tend to think about Hollywood. We tend to think about the entertainment industry and the arts, particularly film and television, in large part because they are the largest employers, one of the largest employers in the city. But last year, only about 22 of 106 films released by the major studios were filmed in Los Angeles. The rest were in other places like Canada, the United Kingdom. A lot were shot in New York and other places, Georgia, Louisiana, where they have tax incentives and tax credits. And so there's a feeling of late with funding and the lack of tax incentives, although that's increased in the last year, that we're losing some of our cultural ground and our creative ground among some people. There's layoffs at some of the media outlets and things like that. So the question is LA still really the cultural capital of the world? And one of the things we want to address is arts and entertainment. And our first panelist, Danielle Brazel, is general manager of the Department of Cultural Affairs, and you're at the center of really traditional creative community in that you produce, you give grants and funds to organizations and people who are creatives in the city. So talk to me a little bit about this. Is LA the creative capital of the world? Small question.
Just throw it out there, Lisa. I would say yes and no, right? It depends on how we, you know, define creativity and how we talk about capital. And in order to do that, one thing that I'm always curious about is to get a real sense of who are we talking to right now? And that means you in this audience. How many artists are in the room? Raise your hand. And hold your hands up, just because I want people to see. And as an artist, do you also identify as a creative entrepreneur? Okay, great. So how many creative entrepreneurs are in the house? Just because you know. All right. How many scholars are in the room?
Everyone's a scholar.
Great. Everyone's a scholar. Well, I'm only having... students? How many students are in the room? How many people from the public sector? Government? Okay. We got two. Government here. Three? Yeah. Okay. I see you, Wendy. Business owners? How many people, business owners and the creatives? Okay, so great. It's all good, because if you're an artist and a creative entrepreneur. But I'm seeing a lot of people whose hands I'm missing. So, I mean, I'm not sure what else am I missing here in terms of sectors.
Who appreciates art?
Okay, so art lovers, I'm going to get.
All right, so that's the rest of them.
And nonprofit arts organizations.
Excellent.
Okay, great. So I think that's the mix. And what I saw is that this is precisely what it takes for Los Angeles to have a thriving culture where creativity can thrive. If I think about, is Los Angeles the creative capital of the world, I want to look at, I think in some areas, we are the creative capital by pure dollar and cents, bar none. Our scale across the board is going to blow anybody out of the water. But I also want us to look at it from an equity point of view. And if we look at what is the cultural or the the value system that we place on cultural expression is very different depending on which community is creating that cultural output. And I think that we actually have a tremendous amount of room to grow in making sure that our cultural production and our cultural output represents and looks like the population of Los Angeles. And if we can do that, then truly we would be the creative capital of the world.
So as the general manager of the Cultural Affairs Department, what do you do to foster that?
I think it's one of the biggest opportunities and part of the biggest challenges that we face as a public agency. We have to have sets of criteria in which we can invest in creativity and invest in culture. And that is through three key strategies, which is our grant-making strategy. And how many of you have applied for a grant from the Department of Cultural Affairs? Just raise your hand. It's a hard process. I mean, it is a 30-page application. You have to fight for that money, let me tell you. You have to show that you have had, 2+ years of programming, letters of reference, and it is all based on artistic excellence. You have to be incredibly competent to make your argument in English. And I will tell you that it's a flawed system, and it's the best system that every public agency has, from the city of Los Angeles to surrounding cities all the way up to the federal government. I think we need to pilot new ways in which we get creativity and invest in creativity on the street. So one of the ways in which we're hoping to do this next year, we got a small pot of money in this year's budget, which is called the Art Activation Fund. And it really is looking at how do we activate our public spaces through cultural programming. But again, that cultural programming must be reflective of the community in which it came from, and also find ways of bringing in new work to various communities. But that application process should be much more streamlined and much more easy to navigate. So that's one of the ways. Another way is through our community youth arts program. Watts Towers to Sun Valley to Canoga Park, we are providing career education in creative curriculum to students who would absolutely not have access to creativity or technical skills in applied creativity otherwise. And then we also have an incredible artist in residency program, which I see Maria in the audience, and you've been an artist in residence for many, many years, as I was when I was an artist doing work in Los Angeles. And it's a way in which we can go out into the community and create public access that is by far one of the most effective ways. And then finally, I would say is our grants program, and that is the way nonprofits can do things that government can't, and you can do it in a way that is far more creative and more targeted to the communities that you're working in, which is why I think our grants program is so important.
Great. So, the same question. This is Kimberly Ritter Martinez, and she is an economist. She's with the LA County Economic Development Commission. And aside from bragging rights, Kim, why is it important for LA to be a creative capital? You were one of the lead authors, or you were the lead author on a report by the LAUDC and Otis College, right, on LA as a creative community. Could you speak a little bit about that and why it's important that somebody has that title?
Right. So as an economic development corporation, we are concerned with business retention, business creation, and the overreaching goal is job creation. So really, our ultimate goal is that everybody in Los Angeles who wants a job can find one. And we're talking about good quality jobs that provide a living wage and have room for advancement, which is a huge goal. So where do you start when you're thinking about doing something like that? Well, you play to your strengths. And we know that creativity is one of Los Angeles's foremost economic assets. So we've partnered with Otis College for, since 2007, and every year we've put out this study on the creative economy. Now, usually when you talk about the creative sector, people immediately think about, here in Los Angeles, entertainment, arts and cultural programs, things like that. But what we've really done is gone and broadened that definition. Now, creativity is not something that, as an economist, I can define very well. I know it when I see it, you know, but we can't put numbers to it. And economists, we have to talk about things we can measure. When we started doing this, there wasn't a lot of literature out there, not a lot of work being done in this field. So this report has really evolved over the years, and we've added a lot to what we use to define as the creative sector. So when we talk about the creative sector in our report, we are talking about the businesses and individuals that are involved in producing creative content, taking original ideas. And these things include, you know, the visual and performing arts, but we're also talking about toy, furniture, and apparel manufacturing. We include the communication arts, we have photography, graphic arts design, we include architecture, interior design, furniture, all of these things. So we include that, so the economic production of goods and services, but we also include organizations that provide a venue for artists to share their work, such as museums, art galleries, and theaters. The next component of that is a support system for the arts. So we're talking about K through 12 education. We're talking about secondary postgraduate arts programs. And then the philanthropic organizations that, and other kinds of nonprofits that provide financial resources and infrastructure support to the creative arts. So when we look at this, you know, I'm preaching to the choir in this room about the importance of arts and culture, but when we are talking about convincing the wider community, policymakers, we have to be able to put the numbers, so numbers of jobs provided, income, gross product, that sort of thing. So the results from this last report, in LA County alone, over 355,000 jobs tied directly to the creative economy. Then if you include all of the secondary effects, what we call indirect and induced employment, we're talking about over 600,000 jobs, 620,000 jobs. One in seven jobs in LA County is tied to the creative economy, whether it's direct, indirect, or an induced job. And we're also looking at the gross profit, product generated. Over 10% of basically the county's GDP is through the creative economy. So that's why it's important that we support the creative economy and that we're able to use these numbers that we've researched and studied in this report to help convince policymakers and the wider community that this is important. Because LA is a big metro region and we have a lot of problems like poverty and inequality and underemployment and high unemployment rates. And what we're trying to do is convince the wider community that some of these problems can be solved through the arts and supporting the creative economy.
So we were talking about this a little bit beforehand. So New York claims that they're the creative capital. Of course, we in LA have the same claim. Your definitions in the Otis report, and let me just mention the Otis report is online. You can find it at the LAUDC website
and Otis's
as well as the Otis website. And it actually is an interesting read. It you may think that, you know, there's economist stuff, but it's actually really interesting. So I urge you to take a look at it. There's cool charts too and things like that. It's very accessible. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, your definition of a creative is very broad, and so is that something, because you need to be persuading, you know, people to understand the importance of this, whether it's government people or just the community. How is that quantifiable, and how can you say, you know, that we are the creative capital because we have these numbers, versus New York, which, or San Francisco, or anywhere in the world that may have different definitions of creatives?
We've included this broad definition because the idea of creativity and the fact that it underlines innovation and invention, which is the foundation to grow a thriving economy. Creativity underlies all that. And we want people to understand that just because you're not an artist doesn't mean you can't be creative in what you do. We are mostly looking at the arts and design work, but we're talking about industrial design. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with WET. They're the ones that make these really elaborate fountains that you see at Las Vegas, at the Bellagio, and now in Dubai. You know, they get classified as fabricated metal products. But if you look at these things, there's a lot of artistry and design work that goes into it. So design and art is everywhere in what we do. And one of the things we've done in the last two reports, normally we just looked at industry. And when you look at industry employment numbers, that includes everybody from the receptionist on up to the CEO, not just necessarily the people involved in creative activities. So we've added an occupational component to this, because what we find is that there are more people employed in creative occupations outside our defined creative industries. Large law firms will employ graphic designers to make the visuals needed in the courtroom to convince the jury of their point. So creativity permeates almost every aspect of our economy, and we need people to understand that, because we need the support. If we're going to talk about workforce development and bringing up the next generation of not just creative workers, but just workers who can think creatively and innovatively, we need that to spur our economy forward, because that's how you attract the kinds of companies to a region that are going to provide those high-quality jobs. And at the same time as you're growing your own workforce, you're bringing in those companies, that brings in creative people from outside the area. And so employment is one aspect of that, but then we have to talk about quality of life. So job opportunities, yes, but the people who are coming here, we want to keep our young people here that graduate from our universities. We also have to think about, in addition to things like affordable housing and good schools for their children, is a vibrant cultural and art scene, because that's the kind of thing that attracts skilled and creative people to the region, which is what we need to grow the economy.
Excellent. Sharon, this is Sharon Anley. Sharon, as founder of Culture Brain and co-creator of Maker City LA, and I'll let you explain what those are, you provide creative space for artists and the new creators of the future. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in LA as far as the outlook for the creative community? And specifically in Maker City, because you have that space, who comes there? Who is, and what are they doing? What ideas do they have? Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, sure. So I have a think tank and consultancy, studies culture. My background is cultural anthropology, ethnography, studying humans in their natural habitat. And largely youth culture, and by that I mean 14 to 40, mostly. And the Maker City LA project is something I co-founded as a real kind of, you know, what I saw happening was this maker movement's been kind of happening for a while. And that was a purely kind of very technology-focused movement about building and making and fabricating on a desktop level. So, but what I saw in LA, a city like LA, is that this kind of idea was happening not just in the technology segment, but fashion and design and all kinds of different food, creative spaces. And what was happening is that once these younger creatives left the institution, there was like a huge gap between what they could afford and where they were. And especially nowadays, most people who are creative need access to what I call pro tools, professional level tools. You can't just like buy a canvas and a paintbrush anymore. You know, you need access to a laser cutter or, you know, certain kinds of heavy duty sewing machines. And most people can't just like come out of school and then buy them, especially because they're in debt. So what a lot of creative people need is community and also access to affordable space and access to affordable tools so they could keep making their art as well as having that community that you do get when you're in college, supporting each other for Socratic dialogue, all that stuff that kind of keeps us going, and also witnessing other creative people in their process. So maybe, you know, you're not a jewelry designer, but watching that person go through their process will spark something, you know, later on. So the idea was the space was a multidisciplinary approach to having a video game designer sit next to a media creator, sit next to a fashion accessories designer, and not have everything be so segregated. And part of the segregation is really kind of a post-industrial focus of the world, like, oh, car designers, all you guys over here, you know, and fashion designers, you're going to be in the Calmar building. And creativity doesn't really work in vertically integrated specialty categories. We want to see like more like a garden of all different kinds of flowers. And so that was the idea. And who's coming is exactly, I mean, it's great. It's like individuals, small businesses, because we fostered this kind of multidisciplinary approach and said it's okay for a YouTuber to sit next to a video game designer, and that's what we want to foster, that once you kind of put that out there on a conceptual level, people are really, especially creative people, are willing to go like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense, you know? So the initial tours of the place were really kind of self-selecting people who got the idea. It either, you know, initially people were like, what is this thing? You know, completely like, we don't like it, it looks weird, we reject it. To people going like, I know exactly what you're doing here and I want to be part of it.
So you act as, just to help the audience and maybe me, understand a little more about what Maker City is. You facilitate, you're not going out and buying industrial level sewing machines mm-hmm. to create things.
Well, actually it's a combination of, there are some that the space bought, and there's a media lab set up, kind of like a little mini stage with a green screen and a podcast studio and a little stage to shoot, I mean, not big feature films, but a documentary, a YouTube video. So it's like kind of somewhere between like shooting in your bedroom to renting out Sunset Soundstage that's affordable. And that was the idea, is that, oh, there's like a podcast studio that I can rent out for $60 an hour or whatever, you know, like really affordable rate, so you can go in and play again. And then the other idea is also to bring in partners who are going to bring in heavy duty equipment, like Tech Shop, for example, is, you know, they're a huge membership-based fabrication kind of studio, so metalworking, woodworking, all the kind of big machines. So it's kind of a combination, you know, and like 3D printing. And so we just wanted to keep it really fluid and not say, oh, only this or only that. Like the whole, you know, what I learned about the physical environments that overproduce creativity have a really low grade of kind of restrictions and policy. And, you know, you have to feel free to punch a hole in the wall or move something. Because the physical space really tells you what you're allowed to do there. I mean, we as human beings all know how to behave. When we walk into a cathedral, nobody has to tell us not to misbehave. Like, the physical built environment tells you how to behave. And that same person can walk across the street into a dive bar and behave a totally different way. And that's the same person. So in the same way, a creative environment tells you, don't touch anything. You know, we're done here. Don't break anything. You know, where everything is a little too perfect. It's a little too... Part of why the gallery environment is so intimidating is because it's that kind of environment where you're like, oh, I don't want to break anything, you know? And it's very intimidating. So if you're trying to think freely, if you're trying to invent new ideas that haven't been invented, the physical space has to allow you to... I mean, it has to tell you, you can break things here. And then you can reinvent. And so part of it is giving people a garden that kind of feels really comfortable where people can just feel free to roam about their own brains, but also just be in witness to other people creating.
Have you found, based on the people who've been in there, have you found that there have been any collaborations or what's the interaction?
Yeah, and that was a big part of the dream. I mean, it's a private project with the spirit of a public project, but there's an artist in residence position on the floor, and part of, you know, there's no money exchange, but we gave free space to the artists, and it's all kind of glass wall so people can see inside. But part of the exchange is there's office hours for that artist, and they have to be in process of a project. So they're working on something, and the community members are free to walk in and just ask questions, which is normally, if you're in a finished setting, like a gallery setting, you don't feel comfortable doing that, but they're just starting, and then we ask them to, and that's the agreement, so people can go in and say, hey, what is this? What are you doing? And, you know, they're happy to talk to them. And through that process, I saw, you know, this one artist had set up her installation, and these guys were taking a web development and UX design class at General Assembly, which is a company that teaches tech skills, and they were just students, and they wandered in, and they're like, oh, hey, what are you doing? And they got to talking, and then they just decided to build a whole interactive, like, website as part of her installation that wasn't even part of the project. So they decided, well, we're just learning these skills that we need a project to do anyway, so we might as well help you.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's really great.
So, and it happened really organically, where instead of trying to, like, force them together or whatever, just let's just keep it loose, but make the agreement so that connection interactivity is baked into the process. And also, it's a very friendly environment. I think that's important, because part of environment, like, you just have to feel like, oh, I can go up and talk to that person, you know? And once you kind of create that energy, you know, people know how to do it. Like, we know how to meet somebody and have a conversation.
Exactly. So you mentioned that these students kind of just happened upon the place and came in. How do you, I want to ask actually all of you, how do you get the word out about what you do, about what the people in this room do? How do you get the word out? I mean, you know, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's all these things. Sometimes there's newspapers and magazines that cover these individual events, places, people. But how do you get the word out? Part of the discussion that we were having earlier about New York versus California is, you know, you can probably stop anyone on the street in New York and they will say they are the creative capital of the world. In LA, you know, with the sprawl and everything else, people are busy, they're on the road a lot. How do you get the word out about what you do in each of your areas? Why don't you start, Sharon?
Okay. For us, we went kind of grassroots up. Because it was a high concept project, it's not like we could point to something else and go, it's just like this, but blue. We needed people to understand it on a concept level, so we really went to creative communities, and we really tapped into our own networks of, okay, like, let's go to the LA design community, and let's you know, I have a friend who does a breakfast lecture series for creatives called Creative Mornings. They meet once a month, and there's a group of designers who come together. You know, I got in there and, like, talked about it, told them what was happening. So, you know, we had a team of people kind of go to endemic communities and really just talk to them as people versus a kind of top-down media approach, because it's going to take more than a headline. It's going to take more than one conversation. And also, when we did this in person, we showed our intention, you know, that, you know, this is a big idea and this is why we're doing it, and that it's totally experimental and it could completely fail. That was, like, it was part of the conversation. And we needed the help of the community to participate with us. Even if that participation was, what is that thing? You know, I don't understand what you're doing. But to really engage in conversation, because the worst is ignoring or being apathetic, right? So that as long as somebody, even if somebody doesn't like it, there's energy being exchanged. Okay, now we're engaged. We can go somewhere with this. But really grassroots, authentic communities and real conversations. And then just a lot of tours, just a lot, you know, people would, and then once we got over the hump, those people, I mean, we're excellent within our own communities at telling people, like, hey, I just heard about this new place. You're going to love it. Like, the friends know who to talk to, so that it would, you know, kind of bubble out that way. So it was just kind of a long-term commitment to find the right people versus there wasn't a pressure of like, we've got to get, you know, 300 bodies in here in 3 months. There wasn't that, thankfully. If there was, it wouldn't have organically formed the same way.
Sure. Kim, you're reaching a different type of audience with what?
Almost the exact opposite approach. So we deal a lot with obviously business owners. We deal directly with local government, with universities. So we have worked with particularly the community colleges and bringing the community colleges and industry together to find out what kinds of programs the colleges need in order to provide the kinds of workers that the businesses here have. Over the last couple of years, we've been able to take this report, and we got the California Arts Council, or commission, involved in this. So now we're doing a statewide study. So we've gone to Sacramento. We've testified before the Senate Arts Committee. And those meetings were packed with people from all over the state. We now have people approaching us. Hey, I'm the cultural affairs director for my little area up in the High Sierras, and we want to know more about how you do this. So what we're looking about trying to put together is a five-year project where we're going to hit all these different regions in California. And obviously, California being California, we're going to be writing about very different kinds of communities once we get outside of the LA Orange County area. So there's that. And I mentioned earlier that when we first started doing this work, aside from people like Richard Florida, who kind of pioneered the study of the creative economy, there wasn't a lot out there for us to go to. Last year, we had the NEA contact us. They were trying to study all of the creative reports that were out there to try and come up with some kind of standardized definition. Well, I looked at the draft of the report, and it's going to be really hard to do because I've read creative economy reports from Arkansas and Colorado and different places, and it's just depending on the assets and the infrastructure and just the inclinations of a community, these are going to be different wherever you go. But what we're finding, as more people have latched onto this idea and have become interested in it and understand the value of the creative economy, I'm getting calls from economic development corporations in Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., and other places like, hey, I want to know more about what you're doing. We want to do the same thing here because we recognize how important that is. I think what we are doing with Otis, and obviously they reach a different audience than we're able to do, so we've got both ends of the spectrum there. But partnering with Otis and they being entrenched in the creative community has opened up a lot of different doors. In fact, this last year, Otis partnered with Artbound on KCET and made an hour-long documentary about the creative economy in Los Angeles and covered everything from what's going on in Boyle Heights with the creative culture there to all the way to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and engineers at Boeing and how they play a role in the community creative economy. So I think people are really starting to grasp this idea outside of just the arts community and recognize how vital and important it is. Because when we talk about young people instilling that sense of creativity and learning how to think outside the box, no matter what kind of field they go into, that's what employers are looking for. You can't just be content to go in and do your 9-to-5 job anymore. You have to adapt and change and think about all the different things you're going to be able to do.
Danielle?
Well, I think we need to do a much better job at communicating that Los Angeles is the creative epicenter of the entire world. I just think we do. I mean, here's the deal. The city of Los Angeles, did you know that basically virtually no tax dollars goes to supporting arts and culture in Los Angeles? There is a small 1% on hotel occupancies, which is a bed tax, and we get up to 1% of that TOT. So it's really only people that stay in hotels that fund the Department of Cultural Affairs. The other 1% for our city is our LA Visitors and Convention Bureau. And what they're doing is really important. They're marketing Los Angeles to the rest of the world. And the way in which they market Los Angeles isn't really about creativity. It's about sun and beaches and, you know, it's not really the creative message. We're working on it and we're getting better. And I think that there's some really great leadership that's happening at LA Visitors Convention Bureau. But my gosh, every person in this room is an amazing ambassador, right? How do we catalyze you as a creative ambassador and a cultural ambassador for our city? How do we tell and market Los Angeles's creative vibrancy to ourselves? What type of positive reinforcements do we need in our communities to say, you're a creative person, we thrive on creativity. We need to kind of have that reverberate and reflected on every single level in our print media. You know, it's very difficult. We're the second largest media market in the country. And all the king's horses and all the king's men can't even penetrate our own media market. So we have to go stealth. We have to think about new, creative, innovative ways of reinforcing our own message to each other. And, you know, that's something that, you know, in many ways, I feel like the Department of Cultural Affairs were kind of tilting at windmills with our website that was built in 2000. But hold, now come on. easy. You know, we have this great opportunity to build a new 2.0 website. But look, a city public cultural affairs agency is not going to be able to fill that hole. We really need to think about how we collect, aggregate, and then distribute really important data and imagery. The mayor's office has this new Rebrand LA effort that's underway that's really about branding Los Angeles to Angelenos and built on that creativity. But it's something that I would actually ask you, how do we get the word out? And how do we also make sure that every community, regardless of where you are, regardless of your zip code, is empowered through your creative expression? You know, back in 2004, we had, I would say, you know, I can't give a percentage. I want to give a percentage, but it would be based on nothing. We had a lot more festivals in Los Angeles, and festivals was actually a really inexpensive way where communities could apply for small pots of money and hold community cultural festivals at local parks. And that is one of the ways in which, again, we can reflect creativity and embrace kind of our cultural identity, our diverse cultural identity in Los Angeles in a really dynamic way. And I think it's something that there's great opportunity as the city rebuilds from you know, really coming on the brink of the Great Recession. So I hope that those are the kind of things that we'll start to see kind of come back.
Okay, I was just given the high sign. Ooh. So I'm gonna really quickly, just so everyone knows about where is Maker City located and can we find you?
Maker City LA, you can find all the information if you go to MakerCityLA.com, but it is on Broadway and Washington, downtown South LA.
It's fantastic, by the way.
It's the old LA Mart buildings, and LA Mart is still there, but we took the 11th floor of the building and basically made this conceptual space out of it. So there's free programming going down. If you are sign up for the newsletter, it tells you all of everything from kind of coding and flower design to you can take an old dress and upcycle it, turn it into some new thing. There's lots of different kinds of classes and community activities happening, as well as just really interesting people making art and working together.
And quickly, can I get the website and where you can find the report, Kim?
Oh, well, LAADC.org is our website. You can also go to Otis College and get the report there, as well as a link to the documentary I mentioned. And I should have mentioned too, we're a nonprofit as well, so all of the economic research that we publish is available on our website for the public.
And Danielle, your website, and you have a newsletter too.
I would say that, you know, follow us on Twitter and, you know, go to Culture LA.
Follow us on
Culture LA for Facebook as well, because that's actually where we have a lot of control. New websites in the hopper. It'll launch, you know, in a couple months, probably a little bit longer than a couple months, so stay tuned. But it's fabulous. The comps are going to be amazing. And I would say that this is the opportunity that we have in the city right now, is where we're able to bring our systems online. And that means our grant systems, our public art systems, our mural registration systems. You know, can we really bring the Department of Cultural Affairs into the 21st century and modernize it and create additional layers of transparency so that we can truly make sure that the work that we're doing gets out to communities throughout Los Angeles, but is also reflective of Los Angeles.
And all of you are required to be messengers for all of these people.
Please.
I wanted to open this up for questions from the floor.
Is LA the creative capital of the world? What other places might there be that you are seeing, and I'm particularly directing this to Kimberly, that might be competitive? Are there other places where governments are providing different sorts of support to allow this creative entrepreneurial economy to survive, and is there more that we could do here in California or LA?
By a lot of measures, just by sheer mass, I would say we could legitimately claim to be the creative capital of the world, talking in terms of jobs, incomes, the value of our creative output. Less measurable would be the influence globally of our cultural output. Now, in Los Angeles, we have a real competitive advantage in creativity. And this is sort of a cluster that's developed over a lot of time. We talk about industry clusters in economic development, like you have Silicon Valley, you have biotech in San Diego. They tend to develop organically for particular reasons having to do with geography, assets, things like that. We have the creative advantage here in LA. Other places recognize now that, in particular places like China, that the value doesn't come from manufacturing the iPhone and its components. The value comes from thinking up the idea. The problem with that, and in China, the government, we want to improve our universities, we want to improve our inventiveness, we don't want to just keep copying and stuff. But unless culturally you are open to new ideas, it's very hard for a government to say, okay, we're going to be creative, when there's political repercussions for thinking outside the box. So that's one example. LA is known for being a really receptive place to new ideas. And in that, we're very unique from a lot of other places. You know, New York has it. There's a lot going on in Minneapolis right now. But LA is kind of the core of that, I think, in the United States. And I think we can still claim that.
I would also add that Ann Markison did a wonderful report a few years back, I think in 2006. And she was able to identify Los Angeles as an artist super city. So we have more artists living and working here in Los Angeles than any other place in the country. And in many ways, our artists and our nonprofit arts organizations become the R&D for creative ventures. And that we actually pivot pretty fluidly between the for-profit and nonprofit sector. And in many ways, it's kind of the constant driver, because there isn't a whole lot of support mechanisms for individual artists, that it kind of forces them into commercial settings, and then for kind of their creative inspiration, they go back into kind of the pure or the nonprofit, the mission-driven work. And so we have this very interesting structure where we pivot. And I can't say if that's good or bad, but I would say that it pushes new creativity and new ideas all the time.
Can I add one thing? You know, I cited some pretty big numbers, 355,000 direct jobs, 10% of the region's gross product. But we know we're not capturing everything, because we do our research based on how the government codes and the statistics that they produce. And take, for example, we know gaming development is huge in this area, but there's no code that a company can say, I develop video games. So we have to use software programming, which could be anything from a CPA software package to, you know, the next hit video game. So there's definite shortcomings in how these things are measured. And we've been bugging the people who put out these codes, please, you know, we need better information to help define some of these things. So in spite of the big numbers we produce, we know it's even larger than what we're able to describe.
And I would just add one final thing, because you're getting me going, is that we will lose our competitive edge if we continue to to not educate in our public schools creative skills, creativity, collaboration, critical thinking skills, communication. Public education should be our first and foremost priority. And in 10 years, it could make a huge world of difference. So I think we're really selling ourselves short.
Yeah, because so much emphasis right now is on STEM. And as important that it, as that is, not every young person's mind goes in that direction. So the arts in school, in K through 12 especially, are important for keeping kids who might drop out otherwise engaged. The studies that I've come across in my research on the creative economy has shown that kids who have access to art programs, they do better on their standardized testing. They become, and this is especially true in low-income households, these kids become, they stay in school longer, they get, they become more civically engaged, which is important. They just become more, and I totally lost my train of thought, sorry. But I think you get what I'm trying to say about that. That yeah, it goes beyond just art in school. It has such wide-ranging effects that will, you know, have repercussions throughout the economy.
I'm Don DiPietro. I have an MBA and an MFA, which gives me a certain schizophrenia in this landscape. You talked about making investments in the creative community and the creative environment. How do you measure the return on that near term and long term? And is there a way to look at the public and private sector investments? And Kimberly particularly, I mean, my instinct is that what we create is exported in the 21st century, but creativity doesn't export. We still own it here. So how do we capitalize on that going forward?
It's a difficult question in terms of measuring returns on investment. The best way we have right now to measure our success is to look at job creation, look at the kinds of incomes that that's coming in. And we do export a lot of our creative capital in the form of royalties from the movies and TV shows that we produced. One of the other things I'm involved in at LAADC is international trade. So if just the sheer numbers on the royalties that come back to us in terms of exports on our creative content is huge. It's one of LA's biggest.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, if we create something here, it gets manufactured overseas. But if we create it here, that the benefit stays here. So right. how do we amplify that effect? And for example, we create more iPhones, even if they're manufactured offshore. The question is, how do we generate more iPhone creation, more invention at that level?
That is supporting educational programs. It's supporting artists through creative spaces so that artists have a place to create. It's supporting research and development. What's difficult, it's hard to untie creativity from innovation. So talking about creativity naturally leads us to talking about the tech sector a lot of times. So providing the R&D dollars and keeping the kids who graduate our universities here and bringing in the companies to employ them, that's what we're looking at.
Sharon, aren't you also seeing a lot of that at MakerLab?
Yeah, I also want to say that part of what makes Los Angeles a special environment that actually overproduces creativity and innovation and new ideas that's different from around the world is our historical and cultural acceptance of any weird idea a person can think of. And it's incredibly important in a community that when you have a weird idea as a seedling, that the whole community doesn't shut you down and says, like, that's weird, stop thinking that. Because artists are sensitive people, creative thinkers are sensitive people, and when they have that kind of negative feedback, they kind of get self-critical and they shut down their own creativity. But as a cultural environment, and because this is so far away from Europe and the West has never been that impressed with wanting to get Europe's approval, like the East Coast has always been, we're so far out, we're just like, oh, I don't care about them. And it gives us some psychological freedom. And when you have psychological freedom and also physical freedom, the space, our minds get to wander. And it takes more, and the measurement is more than just jobs and data points, because there is, you know, a kind of energy and sun and fertilizer and love of this kind, these kinds of ideas that help this place be an overproducer. It's kind of like, oh, the Burgundy region of France, you know, like that wine is made, that there's a terroir to the land. And there is something special about this land in the same way, is because any creative person coming from anywhere can land here and think of a strange idea. And, you know, most people in the community will be like, right on, go for that, you know? And that's not nothing. You know, in fact, that is one of the most special qualities about this city, is that you go, you do that, you think that, and then you go, okay, I'm going to think my next thought, and then I'm going to make this next thing. So that's the thing, that no matter how much money a city has or people or buildings, you can't just make that. That's like magic in the air. This is a place that has, like, that kind of magic has created everything from Frank Zappa to SpaceX. You know, and so that's the potential. Like, we are going to put people on Mars from the rockets that they're building down in El Segundo to the like completely weird niche artists in music and sound design and sculpture doing the most, you know, personal work. And the fact that it can bridge this span is pretty incredible.
One of the really interesting things that we've found in our research is that the rate of growth among single person firms, so basically a self-employed independent contractor, is just growing so much faster than traditional wage and salary employment. So that's where we see a lot of this activity happening. Well, part of it's driven by bigger economic factors like globalization and the recession. So even before the recession, you had companies getting rid of their graphic design departments and outsourcing that kind of work. During the recession, the problem was even bigger, more companies doing this. So what you had was these people going out, especially after the recession, not being able to become reemployed in their chosen field, saying, hey, this is what I know how to do. I'm going to start my own business. And what's really exciting about this is that now technology is out there to facilitate. So a single person can compete with what would have been a much larger firm. And these are just the people who are filing their 1099s. Okay, so we know there's a lot more going out there. And just anecdotally, especially talking to young people, there's different kinds of ways people are organizing their business, the way they're conducting business, marketing and buying and selling, that is not something we're able to measure yet. That's one of the problems in what I do. I can only get what the government provides as far as statistics go. So, you know, I just know from talking to people there's all these really interesting things going on, but I don't have a way to put a number to it.
What we see a lot is in our community is the rise of the indie artist. And because of software and tools that you could be a one-person operation, concept your work, make it, and, you know, sell it online and then fulfill it, what used to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in just building an e-commerce site, for $30 a month, I could have a beautiful looking professional site that can sell stuff, take credit card payments, PayPal payments. So this is what's happening is, you know, those of you enjoying your local favorite, like, you know, bean to bar chocolate or pickles, you know, part of, you know, California passed the Homemade Foods Act, which allowed small producers under $50,000 to make food in their homes and produce it for small batch. So there's now tens of thousands of creative, what I consider creative foodie people, making the best bread, the best chocolate, the best pickle. And there's a show in our building called Artisanal LA twice a year where, you know, the artisanal tofu guy is right next to the artisanal sea salt guy and the hot pepper guy. And, like, there's a whole universe of these micro niche artisanal creators just popping up, like, everywhere. They're like little beautiful flowers kind of coming up.
Well, and I think this goes to the idea of, you know, what are the conditions for creativity to thrive? And what are the conditions for creativity to thrive at all levels in Los Angeles that can be sliced, you know, as the largest county in the country with 88 cities and 81 school districts, or even in the city of Los Angeles? And I think that, you know, we're talking about creativity, and we're also talking about, you know, this from a commercial standpoint or perspective. But I would also say is, you know, what is the role of creativity in your quality of life? And what kind of life do you have is not just about your economic output. Yes, we want to have kind of affordable housing and be able to, you know, send our kids to you know, good, strong schools and be able to get our needs met. But I think if we really want to look at what is the role of creativity in actually building a healthy, balanced life, and what is the relationship to it in an overarching quality of life for Los Angeles, is something that I would really kind of say is actually part of our ROI that we should add into that equation.
Hi, my name is Kelsey Hess, and my question is, in my conversations, I've sensed a little bit of doubt as far as people really believing that Los Angeles is the creative capital. And so my question is, do you think that because Los Angeles is so spread out and it's so sprawled across, does that affect how people think of Los Angeles? And do you think that affects their awareness of how culturally dense LA is?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, there was more. And I guess if that's a problem, how big of a problem is that we're looking at? Are we at the beginning of this problem, or have we been dealing with it for, you know, decades?
Yes.
It's a natural challenge of the terrain, so it's not all packed into 8 square miles like New York, so it's just served up. You open the door, it's like right there for you. So it takes a bit of exploring. So I think that for people to really, unfortunately, it takes a little bit of work, but if you have a kind of an explorer mindset, there's actually so much more diversity. You know, if you guys live on the west side, just go east of La Cienega. There's like a whole universe over there. And vice versa, you know? But we get kind of lazy about just staying in our own little world. And for some people who aren't from LA, they'll come to Beverly Hills or West Hollywood, spend a couple days and say like, oh, I hate LA because everybody's so fake or whatever. But it's just that like, oh, well, you were just in the place where everybody from the outside is. Like, it's not even like people who live here. So it for those of you who are real LA denizens, we were just talking about this backstage, is like, you know, to really appreciate LA, like, you need an LA Sherpa. And like, I play that role with my friends who are from out of town. Like, let me take you by the hand. Come look at this place, this awesome taco bar over here, or, you know, this place that's like, it's so unique. So it takes a little bit more work, but there is an adventure in it. And we just have to be aware that we're making these judgments from like a really small place, but it's really here. It just takes some, you know, just.
And I think that we're also on the crest of an incredibly new city, right? Yeah. For the first time since the red car, we're going to have regional transit, and that's going to connect us in ways. I think that if we embrace kind of a neighborhood strategy, because we have to take on what is unique to Los Angeles. We're never going to be New York or San Francisco or Chicago. We're LA, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. And so let's embrace. I mean, you know, I grew up in the Valley in the 1970s and 80s, and you know, it was a little bit of a cultural wasteland, but we kind of embraced that.
Hey, don't knock Valley Girl.
I mean, I'm telling you, I'm from the Valley, you know. But we also have to say that we don't have the same type of cultural infrastructure that we do in the Miracle Mile. And that when we think about cultural infrastructure, let's open our eyes and let's open our minds and say, you know what, it doesn't have to be in our formal kind of Western ideas of what that looks like. Let's think about how culture manifests in Los Angeles and communities and neighborhoods throughout. I mean, it is very much a Western idea that, you know, culture is outside of ourselves, but it's actually part of who we are. So our very nature of Los Angeles, as hard as she may be to travel through sometimes, that is actually part of our creative cultural experience.
And I think we've gotten very complacent about our identity as a cultural capital, right? We hear, oh, LA is a creative culture or a capital of the world, and we don't really think about it. So it's a matter of the stories we tell ourselves. And one of the things that we do at the LA EDC, and not to knock the media, but somebody will report on a story like, oh, all big companies are leaving LA because it's too hard to do business here. Well, empirically, that's not the case. So we have to pay more attention and really look at what's going on and try and dispel some of these things that we've started telling ourselves, which aren't necessarily true, and that there is more going on here, and it's a vibrant place. You're all here still working, so there's still some businesses that stay here, and there's a reason for that. So
that's just clickbait.
Did you say clickbait?
Yeah, that's just a clickbaity headline so that you click and go like, oh my God, it's not true.
That's going to conclude our program. Thank you.
We're ending on